Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk. Yes, another feast of technology for you, as always. With me, Stephen Scott, this week we have Sean Preece. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Stephen. How are you?
I am good. Thank you for asking. Nobody ever asks. I'm fine.
I know, and it was a normal response. See, I didn't say anything clever, anything funny. I'm being professional today.
Well, that's nothing unusual, because being funny is not really your forte, is it?
You see, you try and be nice, and this is what you get.
We've also got Lydia Hume back with us again. It's lovely to have you back, Lydia. Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. And Sean, how are you?
Oh, I'm very well, Lydia. Thank you. Oh, how are you?
Charming.
Oh, no, I'm very well. Thank you for asking. Marvellous.
We're so civilised. Mm-hmm.
Interesting way to resign. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being on the show this week, as always. Yes, another technology week upon us, and so much news to talk about. Big news from Microsoft this week, guys. Launching virtual reality for blind people.
So we've heard.
I'm intrigued to see how that goes, yeah. Also this week, we are going to be hearing about the HomePod. Sean, our good friend Garth Humphreys, who is from Australia. Australia! That's my Australian accent, by the way.
Oh, that was perfect. It was like I was there.
It wasn't it? It was just as if I'd flown you there myself. He's got himself a HomePod, hasn't he?
He has, yes. And I'm very interested to see if he keeps it or it's going back. So I am going to chase him up on that. But he will be going through the setup and letting us know his initial impressions on it.
Yeah, and if you don't want to get yourself a HomePod because they cost a lot of money, then there are alternative Bluetooth speakers out there. Claire Potter joins us with some interesting and accessible Bluetooth speakers in Potter's Picks this week.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's all coming up on this week's Tech Talk. Okay, guys, so this week I thought we'd kick things off with a chat about Calibre Audio Library. A lot of you will remember that we've had a few emails in over the past couple of weeks just talking about the app that Calibre Audio Library's put out there and some of the issues that they've been having. First up, a couple of weeks back, we heard from listener Julian, who asked why he couldn't type his membership number into the field despite TalkBack announcing everything correctly. Listener Michael Brown then came back to us telling us that TalkBack had to actually be turned off because the app itself self-voiced. Well, Julian then came back on to confirm that this worked, but he wasn't too happy that he had to turn TalkBack off to make it all work. So we wanted to get some clarity on this, and I've been in touch with Calibre, and Peter Gurney joins us now to hopefully clarify all of this for us. Peter, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Steve.
That was really the positions of people having issues with the app. I have to also say, though, you know, all of the emails said wonderful things about Calibre Audio Library, and I think the message I was getting loud and clear, Peter, was that people think the library is brilliant and they just want to access it, but they were having issues.
Let's
go through some of that. You know, so first of all, the app self voices. So, you know, if you don't use a screen reader at all, like VoiceOver on the iPhone, or if you use the Android phone, you don't use TalkBack, you can use this app with a voice, which is brilliant. But if you do use VoiceOver and you do use TalkBack, the self-voicing, how does that work? How does that build itself in?
Right. Well, it should automatically mute the built-in phone voice. So if you've got VoiceOver running, when you enter the Calibre app, the self-voicing takes over and VoiceOver should be muted, apart from occasionally says the odd couple of words as you launch the app. You shouldn't hear VoiceOver at all or TalkBack on Android until you exit the app, and then VoiceOver will come back in automatically as soon as you exit the app.
Okay, yep, that does make sense. But as Stephen said, the emails we've received it seems that TalkBack is causing issues when you're trying to enter the PIN to log into the app. It just isn't working. So, obviously, the workaround that people have come up with is to turn off TalkBack. But that can cause an issue in itself when you want to start TalkBack back up. Because depending on what version of Android you're using, what device, it can be tricky and you may need sighted assistance to start the TalkBack screen reader up again, which obviously isn't great.
Right.
And as our listeners keep telling us, the Calibre support is good, it's friendly, and they're really trying to help, but they haven't come up with an answer to this. So are Calibre aware of this specifically, this aspect, this particular problem?
Right. I haven't been made aware of anything, as far as I was, you know, to believe that it should work exactly the same as on an iPhone, that, you know,
yeah,
TalkBack should be sort of muted once you go into the app. The only thing I can think of is, you know, obviously, as you know, when you're talking Android, all the different phones, the different makes, the different versions of Android, makers of their own phones do alterations, don't they, to
That's
the Android
right.
operating system and how it works. And I'm wondering if it's to do with somebody using a phone, for instance, on an old Android version.
The version that we were made aware of, I think, was the first time we were made aware of it on an email, was version 6. So,
oh, right. I would have expected it to have been working on that.
Yeah.
And Peter, this is the challenge, isn't it? It's constantly battling all these different versions that keep coming out.
That's it, Steve. I mean, that was you know, one of the main points of making the app, that it was self-voicing and worked identically whether you were using an iPhone or an Android phone, because of the changes that can happen, you know, on both operating systems. We wanted it that when somebody needed help, it was the same instruction no matter what they were using.
And that was the reason why you brought in the self-voicing in the first place. It was so that support could be given to everybody, no matter what device they were using, you know, and it was easier for you guys to help diagnose any issues and go through and train people on the app, I guess.
That's it. Because again, I mean, obviously the staff at Calibre are sighted people, so they're not using access technology every day of their lives as we do. So for them to be able to know how to do anything on the different versions of VoiceOver or different versions of Android, it would have been, you know, almost impossible. You know, it's hard enough for us that are using it every day.
Yes.
But so you needed something that, you know, would be easy to use and easy to resolve people's problems with.
Yeah, I was wondering, if you're not a VoiceOver user at all, do you still have to have this self-voicing system working on the app?
It's got magnification in there as well, and colour contrasts.
Yeah.
And I believe you should be able to turn the voice off, but I will double check that.
Mm-hmm.
And we are currently in the sort of next phase of adding more functions to the app. I mean, the long-term plan is that eventually it will be controlled just by talking to it.
Aha.
So you won't have to, you know, do anything other than touch a button and say, search for Agatha Christie books.
Brilliant.
Or whatever, but it will be, you know, voice activated rather than typing.
And I suppose as each new generation of the app comes along and each new update comes along, you can take everyone's feedback from what they've said this time, these people that are having trouble with the logging in and with entering their user numbers, etc. And you'll be able to check on various Android phones, won't you, then, to be able to make sure that it does work. It's in its early stages.
That's it. Apart from having people testing in Calibre, during the development, we bought in, you know, phones, iPads, Android phones. We had all different ones we were testing on in-house.
Yeah.
But then we had a group of sort of guests to test it out as well on their own devices.
But I take it that the Android issue, this specific Android issue, never came up in that testing?
No. That's what made me...
strange.
That's why I was surprised when you said it was at Android version 6, because I think we tested it far back as... was it Jelly Bean? It was something like 4.2?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And I think it was tested all the way back to work with Jelly Bean.
Gosh.
I certainly think anybody who's got any further issues should definitely keep in touch with you to let you know what's going on. Of course, people are welcome to get in touch here with the program, but I think it's also important that people get in touch with you.
Yes.
We will, of course, send all our emails to you so that you know you're aware of what we've been told. And in addition to that, people should get in touch with you. How can they do that? Because I imagine there's people listening thinking, oh, I want to tell Calibre about this. You know, what's the best course of action with that one?
I mean, probably the best way is to ring the Calibre customer services, which I'm sure you know the number is 01296 432 339.
Can I just double check then? So are the Calibre support are aware of this issue now, though?
I'm not aware that they're aware of the talkback issue, because I didn't even know about this until Steve told me.
Right.
But once we've finished today, I'll call and have a chat with Mike, the director at Calibre.
Excellent.
And see if he's been made aware of it and get the programmer and developer to look into this. Because I said they're just starting, or shortly starting the next stage. The next stage is to enhance some of the features. So, for example, if you're looking for a book, at the moment it'll only tell you the title of the book, and then you can swipe right on it, and it'll play you a sample of the book, which I've never been actually very happy about it being a sample, because it's a random sample, and I've always thought it should be the synopsis of the book. And that's what it will be. So if you go into categories or you search, when you go down the list, instead of just telling you the name of the book, it will verbalize the author and the reader and possibly the length of the book. They won't be able to make that all a visual thing because there's not enough room on the screen to do it, but it will give you more information. And then when you flick right on it, instead of playing a sample, it will actually speak the synopsis of the book and also again tell you things like the author and the reader and how long the book is.
Yeah, that is brilliant. Peter, thank you so much for coming on. I know that you're a trustee at Calibre, and I know you're going to do what you can here to help those out who have had issues, and we really appreciate you taking the time to listen to those concerns and also to feed that back as well. It's been really good to have a chat with you, Peter Gurney.
Thanks. You're welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Peter.
Really good to have Peter on there, and as he says, get in touch with Calibre and do tell us more about issues you're having. You can email us directly if you wish. We can pass on the information, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Now, guys, have you thought about getting yourselves a HomePod yet from Apple?
No.
Well, no. Really?
What? I mean, come on. This is going to be the greatest speaker ever, and you guys aren't interested.
Well, there's a thing I like to do with Apple products, and that thing is let everyone else buy them, realise that there's a problem with the first release, Let Apple come back, sort it out, and then buy the second release when things are working.
So cynical, Lydia.
Yeah. Sean's not buying it because he's just cheap.
Correct. And I'm going to own that. There's nothing wrong with that. I am very cheap.
Well, one man who has went out and bought one is Garth Humphreys. He's in Australia, and he sent us his review.
Brilliant.
It is absolutely beautiful, and we call it HomePod. Yes.
So this has just arrived today. I've just pulled it out of the box. Lovely packaging as usual with Apple. And I'm about to plug it in for the very first time, and we'll check out how easy it is to set up with VoiceOver. Okay, we have power now. Well, that'll be it. Not sure what exactly is supposed to happen here, but given that I have VoiceOver turned on my phone.
Files, HomePod, heading, setup, button.
Okay, so very similar to the Apple AirPods, where it just recognizes that you want to set up. And so I'm going to hit setup.
Set, where is the HomePod? Heading, living room, master bedroom, office.
We'll go with office.
Continue, button, personal requests, heading.
Now, personal requests. If my iPhone is on my home Wi-Fi network, on the same network that the HomePod is, if I have personal requests turned on, anyone can walk up to my HomePod, get it to send a message from my iMessage account or from my messages, set reminders for me, you know, access some of my personal data. This said, I am in the same home at the time. As soon as my iPhone goes off my home Wi-Fi network, that functionality will be disabled and people will just be able to use the HomePod for playing music. At this stage, I'm going to proceed and let it turn this feature on.
Enable personal requests button.
And I will
terms and conditions heading.
Turn that on for now. Now, terms and conditions.
Agree button.
And let's agree to those, otherwise we won't get much further.
Use your iCloud account, Wi-Fi, and settings on this iPhone to configure your HomePod. You can change them later in the Home app. Transfer settings button.
And let's transfer those settings. So once again, given that I have VoiceOver turned on my phone, my VoiceOver settings will be transferred to the Apple HomePod.
VoiceOver on.
Now, as you'll notice, all I did to start the whole pairing process was plug in the HomePod. It then booted up. We heard a chime there, and the mere fact that my iPhone was near it was enough for my iPhone to get an alert and request the startup process.
Setting up.
Hi, I'm Siri. Welcome to HomePod. You can't tell, but I'm waving. To get my attention, say, "Hey, Siri." Let's try it. Say, "Hey, Siri, what can you do?"
Siri, what can you do?
I can do lots of things, like turn on the lights, give you a news update, and tell you about the weather. Now you try. Say, "Hey, Siri, play some music."
Play some music.
I'm on it. Okay, here's a personal radio station built just for you, starting with you too. Remember, anytime you have a question, just say, "Hey, Siri." Pause.
Pause. So the unit itself is about an inch or so taller than my iPhone 6S is long and a little narrower than and it is tall. So it is it's like a can, a cylinder, curved in at the top and bottom, and it's entirely covered, apart from the top surface, with a sort of soft fabric. It's interesting texture, a little bit spongy. The cable coming out of the back is permanently attached, you can't remove it, and it is also covered in a fabric. The very top of it has the round touchscreen with VoiceOver, as we've already seen.
Play.
Seemingly, while there's no music playing, it is all one big play button. There's no other buttons on there. Now, let's just start something playing. Hey, play Elgar Concerto.
Sure. Here's Elgar, cello concerto.
Okay, now we have something playing.
Pause.
Most of the touchscreen, the round touchscreen on top, is...
Increase volume.
Pause button, but we have an increase volume.
Increase volume.
And...
Decrease volume.
Decrease volume as well. And they are, you know, if the chord's coming out of the back at 12 o'clock, the increase is at 3 and the decrease is at about 9 o'clock.
Increase volume.
So if I double tap that... No, double tap and hold.
Decrease volume.
Okay, let's decrease. Yeah, so double tap and hold on the buttons to adjust them.
Decrease volume.
And...
Pause.
If I double tap and hold on the play pause button, well, the rest of the screen, basically, pretty much anywhere, I believe that will initiate Siri. So some of the commands you can give, read me my messages.
You have no new messages.
Add a note.
What do you want it to say?
Remember to buy tomatoes and cheese.
I'm on it. Okay, I created a note. Remember to buy tomatoes and cheese.
Now, one other thing you can do is, hey, Siri, turn off voiceover.
Okay, I turned off voiceover.
So with voiceover off, a single tap, pretty much anywhere on the screen, well, when it's paused, anywhere on the screen, we'll start playback and touch again. And it's really fairly easy to find the volume up and volume down as well. I'm finding that I'm using this with voiceover turned off quite a lot. So turn it on. Now I'm just going to turn it up and down again. Okay. And we'll just pause again. You know, in some ways it's kind of more convenient to use with voiceover off, but obviously, you know, it's easy enough to turn it back on again. So a double tap will skip to the next song with voiceover off, or with voiceover on, a triple tap. So just start playing and I'll double tap. Now, four taps will go back to the previous song, apparently. But that doesn't seem to work. Pause again. So press and hold will initiate Siri without saying the magic command if you're sitting with your device. And obviously with the voiceover on, that's a double tap and hold to initiate Siri. The HomePod also supports Apple Podcasts. So, hey, play Audio Pizza.
Okay, Audio Pizza, more than just a sound bite. Reviews, tutorials and commentary buy-in for the blind podcast now playing.
And here's the most recent episode. Now, another command you can use is, hey, jump forward 5 minutes.
Let's just say I am the winner out of this round. Oh, totally.
And I'll pause that. Okay. Just some thoughts about the HomePod. Now, having used the HomePod for a little while now and testing it in different rooms on the house, it really is an amazing speaker. The way it reacts in different rooms and adjusts the audio is absolutely fantastic. What you're getting with the HomePod is an awesome speaker. It is not in the same category as the Alexa or Google Home in terms of being a personal assistant. There's some of that capability there, but realistically, in my head, I think of Siri as a control mechanism for your speaker rather than a smart speaker. Okay. Now, that's just my opinion, and whether or not the additional price you're paying for a HomePod is worth it to you is really up to you. If what you're wanting is a fantastic speaker, then it really is worth the money. The hardware itself is fantastic, and the deficiencies of HomePod are things that they can update over time with software updates. They have totally nailed the hardware, and now they've got time to improve the functionality of Siri and open up to other services if Apple choose to. But at this point, really what this device is a fantastic speaker for Apple Music, for your podcasts, iTunes Match, and of course AirPlay. So any app on your phone, or you can hook it up to your Apple TV and AirPlay to the device. Hasn't got support for AirPlay 2 yet, but that is coming. But even AirPlay alone means that if you want to use Spotify, you can. It's not natively supported, but you've always got the option to AirPlay into it from pretty much any app you want. Now, for me personally, I don't think I can justify the price, but that doesn't take away from the fact that I think Apple have absolutely nailed the hardware. It sounds absolutely fantastic and far better than any other product in its class. Thanks, guys, so much for listening. If you do want to hear more from Audio Pizza, please feel free to search in iTunes for Audio Pizza or your favorite podcast app. Also, if you want to get in contact with me, garth@audio.pizza. Simple as that, garth@audio.pizza. Thanks again, and bye for now.
Thanks, Garth, and you can share your thoughts if you've bought yourself a HomePod. Email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Right, time for this.
News from the internet.
Yes, news from the internet this week. Then we're going to kick things off with Microsoft, and they've brought visually impaired people a new toy, which is virtual reality.
Just what we need.
I have to say, I don't have to say it, I'm going to say it. I got virtual reality for Christmas. I got PlayStation 4 virtual reality. My wife got me it, and she said to me at the time, she said, look, I don't know if this is going to work for you. That's never a great start when you're opening a present. And I said, okay, I'll give it a try. So I opened it up and I was like, wow, it's amazing. Wow. And so I plugged it all in. And do you know that way I was thinking all the way through it, this is never going to work for me.
Yeah.
I hope it does, but I don't think it will. And I slipped on the headset and I was blown away because I could see it. I could actually see what was going on very clearly. And I thought, you know, this is actually all right. So I think I'm okay with virtual reality, but of course I do know it depends on the eye condition. It depends on what you can see, obviously. I mean, you know, in your case, Sean, would it work for you? I don't know, because you've got tunnel vision, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. So I've got some central vision, so in theory, it should work for me. It should be okay. So it's one of those...
Well, you say that. Oh. But I tried with my right eye tunnel vision. I tried out that PS4 virtual reality and there was nothing. So I'm not sure if, like, where the cameras are in it.
And it's a very small, I don't really understand technically how it works. I mean, you know, host of Tech Talk, you think
of course
I might,
you do.
But I don't. Clue. But, you know, I believe it's a very small screen that's inside it and it's magnified by a screen in front of it. So, you know, if your eyes aren't in the right position or your sight isn't in the right position, you won't be able to see it. So I think you're right, Lydia. I don't think it'll work for everybody. And it's like all these things. I think if you're going to go and if you're even thinking about it, you need to try it first.
Definitely. And,
you know, I will say this, though. I don't think you need much peripheral vision. I can never say that word. You don't need much peripheral vision, I don't think, because it's not really wide. It's more about what's directly in front of you. That's been my experience of it. And obviously the whole point is that you're actually staring forward to look around. You actually move your head to look around. You don't have to see at the sides. So that could have its benefits.
I suppose because I've not got much useful in my left eye at all, because I couldn't use the left screen to work with the right screen, maybe that had some bearing on the fact that it didn't work well for me, and maybe for Sean that'd be different. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it could be. I mean, it is 3D as well, so there's the whole, you know, if the sight isn't the same in both eyes, is that going to have an impact?
Yeah.
It is just one of those things where you've got to try it and see. It's impossible to say if it's going to work for someone just because you've got that eye condition or that much vision. But Stephen seems to love it.
Yeah.
I think I'm lucky, to be truly honest about it. I mean, I cannot believe for once a purely visual medium has become so accessible to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was... But, you know, at the same time, it's all very well, but I can't walk around outside with it.
Well, you could.
Right, well, Microsoft have developed recently, apparently, a haptic controller for virtual reality with an unusual target audience in mind, and that is us. Developers from Microsoft Research Lab have developed what they've called the Kane Troller.
Clever.
A peripheral device, designed to work with the HTC Vive headset and tracker. Now, the goal of this is to create a device that would successfully enable visually impaired people to form an accurate mental map of a virtual space. So the Kane Troller translates the traditional experience of using a white cane and, you know, turn that into a virtual reality environment. With VR, for those who don't know, you can have a kind of out-of-body experience, if you like. Apparently to see what death is like, according to this article. I have no idea how that works.
I read that one.
Or perhaps more likely to become a stormtrooper from Star Wars in a game where you can feel and smell an alien planet. But it isn't a technology that we would often associate with ourselves, and that's the point. But the Kane Troller overcomes the need for visual cues by using vibrations and sound to simulate the effect of tapping different virtual objects and have a wearable braking system to make walls and barriers seem solid. There's obviously still a few limitations to overcome, really. For example, one participant found that the audio modelling, particularly the way sounds echo off solid objects, wasn't quite up to real-world standards. Well, you know, I think we have to be a little bit fair here. this is going to take time to develop into anything meaningful. What is this for? This is my question. What real-world example of this are we going to be seeing this in? Is this purely for gaming so that blind people can sort of walk around in Grand Theft Auto? I mean, what is that about?
I doubt it. I mean, I'm assuming this sort of controller and support for this controller would have to be coded into the game specifically. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe that would be nice. But it's easy to laugh at something like this, but this could be actually really useful for training, mobility training. I mean, I do use Google Maps Street View. If I'm going to an area and I can actually walk down the street virtually, obviously you need to be able to see that. It is quite handy for that, looking for visual landmarks and visual cues that I could look out for when I'm actually there. So something like this, you know, maybe you could do a bit of mobility training, cane work, and you can get a feel for a route where you don't actually have to go out and do it physically. You could do it virtually. If it's, you know, it's all, does it feel right? Does it actually feel like a cane? You know, the vibration thing, does it actually feel tactile? It's one of those things, again, with VR, you'd have to try. But I can see a serious application for mobility work.
It seems a lot safer, doesn't it, to use it like in some sort of mobility centre where you can be in a big room that's very safe, learning to walk across maybe a difficult junction in a city you live in or something. You're trying to learn to use this junction, and instead of putting you out in the real world and saying, go on then, off you go, use your cane, learn it.
Yeah.
And we'll watch you and we'll just yell at you if something's going to hit you, which is pretty much, well, let's face it, is about as technical as cane training gets, really, isn't it?
But it's stressful. Some people don't want to do cane training because of that. I mean, just going out there with the cane and trying it.
It took me months to feel like I knew what I was doing with my cane.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And
maybe this sort of technology can help overcome that. You know, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. So if it could maybe like isolate these tricky junctions or tricky crossings or tricky shops or offices, if you're starting work at a new office or something, if it could be mapped and it could be put into... The trouble is, there's no money for mobility at the moment anyway, so we're suddenly going to start affording to map offices and junctions from. Who knows?
Exactly.
But that's a whole other argument, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, I totally get your point around, you know, moving around with no vision, you know, because my vision is useless in sunshine. So essentially, I do become blind during a sun... If it's a sunny day and I'm outside, I'm blind, essentially, because I just can't see a thing. And it's at that point, my cane becomes my eyes. It really does. And it has to be, you know, that's why I need to know it and know how to use it, as I do. But it's funny how much your way of movement changes because you slow right down. And, you know, I always say it's a bit like walking through treacle because you just don't know what your foot is about to touch. And that's where the trust comes into the cane. And, you know, am I going to walk off a curb? Am I going to end up on the road? I've done it before. You know, I've actually walked off. You know, sometimes the road flattens out so that people in wheelchairs can get off the curb. And I've walked right off that onto a main road because I haven't been able to tell the difference between the pavement and the road. And let's not even talk about shared spaces.
So exactly what we were all thinking. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyway, this seems quite good. I think, I don't know. We'll see. Right. So it's happening. It's in a world to come. But a bit more up to date and a bit more now, and it still involves Microsoft, is Be My Eyes, the app. Do we all use Be My Eyes? Have we all tried it out?
I don't use it regularly, but yeah, it's always on my phone.
No, I don't.
It's always on my phone. I use it more now than I ever did because my wife always throws things at me and says, read that. And I say, yeah, very funny.
I'll get a stranger to read it instead.
I get, you know,
she's a good woman.
To read it. So it's all good. But yes, Be My Eyes has a new feature, and it's called Specialized Help. And when I read this, I thought, oh yeah, what's this all about? Quite interested. What they've done is they've built in a special section to the app. Be My Eyes, essentially, if you don't know, it lets you connect with people anywhere in the world, really, volunteers who, you know, give their time to help us, essentially. And if they will use our cameras and our phones to be able to see what we can see, and if we need to read, say, cooking instructions or a label on something, they would be able to do that. And you know, for me, it's been, especially with things like medicine, you know, food labeling, all that kind of thing. If you're in a shop and you're trying to find a size of something, in my case, you know, quadruple XL.
How many X's are in front of the L? Yeah.
There's too many. I can't see. It's a problem in the nystagmus. It all blends into one. So I you know, get the Be My Eyes app out, and it's absolutely brilliant. But this specialized help feature goes one step further than that, and it actually gets companies to deliver customer service through the app. So, you know, if you've got a say it's in this case, we're talking about Microsoft, because Microsoft have been the first company to sign up to this. They'll offer technical support. So if you've got a problem on your computer, you can show, using your camera and your phone, you can show them the screen and they can talk you through how to resolve it. Personally, I think this is fantastic. What do you guys think?
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. I mean,
absolutely brilliant.
It just makes so much sense. And you've got to give props to Be My Eyes for trying to implement this, because it just makes total sense. You've already got services like Teletype and Texttype for phone services for the deaf, for various, you know, companies that you ring in government departments. So I think this is a fantastic idea. I'm definitely going to try this out, see what the list. Again, it all comes down to how well supported it is, a bit like the Haptic Kane VR. You know, if it's supported and people take the time to actually use the technology and companies actually take the time to use the Be My Eyes service, I think this could be, you know, so useful for us.
What's wonderful about this is, you know, Microsoft, first company to do this in the specialized help section. And what that means is it offers Be My Eyes customers a direct connection to receive technical assistance from the Disability Answer Desk, a free consumer service for Microsoft's customers with disabilities. The app will work exactly the same. It'll connect customers through video, but instead of reaching out to volunteers, it works directly with members of the Disability Answer Desk at Microsoft to get support on questions or questions answered about their Microsoft product or service. Now, through the new app update, customers in Australia, Canada, the UK, Hong Kong, Ireland, India, Malaysia, New Zealand, the Philippines, Singapore, South Africa, and the United States, are there any countries left? Well, they will all be able to connect with the Microsoft Disability Answer Desk. It would actually be quicker to tell you the countries they haven't set it up in. But at Microsoft, they say they're on a journey to empower people with disabilities and want to provide the best experience to all customers. So it's available now. You can update the app and go and try it out. So, you know, find a reason to have a computer problem and get in touch with them and see how it works and tell us. I've got an issue with mine, actually, so I may do a bit of a review for you guys.
Yes.
I'm trying to get my Windows machine, for whatever reason, will not activate. And every time, you know, when you go to activate it, it'll say, call this number. And then you end up through to an American, and no offence, but they don't have a clue what I mean by I can't use it with this, that, and the next thing, because you're not getting through to accessibility. You know, that's, they're not taking you through to those people. They're taking you through to, you know, a licensing desk.
Yeah.
And if you say, oh, I'm blind and I can't use this, they kind of, and then hang up. So, you know, and you know, they've tried their best, but this sounds more like what we're looking for, and this is brilliant. And let's just hope that the other companies jump in on this as well. That would be fantastic.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
That's the news, guys. Time for this.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Yeah, let's get to the emails this week then. And Sean's in trouble. Not for the first time.
Oh, no. He always is.
I know. Well, Nadia's been in touch and she says, I've just been listening to the interview about the Blind Shelf phone. And she says, I'm afraid I disagree with Sean. Which, no offence, says Nadia, I often do. Often phones such as these have far less gestures to remember. And I have a Synaptic phone which has two or three gestures and that's it. I was able to use it within an hour of switching it on. I then tried to use TalkBack and I'm still struggling. So to say that if you're going to learn a new phone and put the time and effort into it, then and one is just the same as the other, well, that's just not true. Regards, Nadia. Oh, Sean, what have you done?
Nadia, thank you so much for the email. I actually appreciate the email. I like a bit of debate about this, and I will respectfully disagree. But look, as I said, some people, these phones will make sense because they just want a phone they can pick up and use. But still, you put an hour into that to learn that, and you're locked into that blind shell phone. You've learned that, you've spent that hour, and now you can use that phone. But if you picked up another phone, you had to use an emergency phone or whatever, then you're back to square one. I just think that hour could have been put to better use learning just a standard Android talkback or voiceover. And I'm quite happy for people to disagree with me and let me know why I'm wrong with that. So keep the emails coming.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, you know, that both of you actually make, because, you know, I kind of tend to side with Sean a little bit on this. I think if you're going to learn the process of learning a... don't be too surprised. It won't happen again. But, you know, I do think that if you're going to learn a phone and you're going to go through the process and you've got a bit of understanding of how it all works, and I'm sure you do, Nadia, then... you know, taking the extra time to learn is maybe worth it. But I also accept that if you've found a solution that works for you, because this is the thing, isn't it? You know, it has to work today. It's all very well saying I'll maybe learn something and in a year it'll be amazing.
Yes.
It doesn't really help today. That's the problem.
And it's also about the support you get while you're trying to learn that. If you're just thrown in, there you go, here's a phone, sort it out, you know, then good luck to you. If you can get some support with that and someone to show you, and you can get access to the information you need to show you how to use it, it makes all the difference in the world. So, and we did have a discussion on this a while back with, I think it was Dave and Kelly on Synaptic, which is, you know, it's the same sort of thing. It's a simplified shell on top of an Android OS. And David was in IT for years and years. He was definitely into his tech and he loved it. He said it was fantastic.
Got to use what's right for you, haven't you?
Yeah, that's it. Essentially, that's it.
You know, if it's right for you, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. The voice of reason is Lydia. you'll get your hate emails.
Well,
right.
Well, I've tied myself into Apple, haven't I? So if I had to use an emergency phone and it was an Android, I don't think I could use it.
Mm.
So, in fact, someone asked me to put my number in an Android the other day and I said, I've got no idea how to go about doing that. So there's
that's a good point. I was wrong, sorry.
So I've still managed to tie myself into it. So, sorry, Sean. I agree with you both.
Yeah, that's how you get out of
that
one.
I'm confused. Yeah. I don't know who I agree with anymore.
Right, let's get to another email from Ian, who says, hi, guys. I've been interested to follow the discussion of the Opticon. This has been a bit of an ongoing conversation that I have to say this goes into our retro moments. I did Opticon training back in 1978, and it was the Opticon which, for a good number of years, allowed me to do my job in IT. There is no doubt that for its day it was a groundbreaking device. However, in my view, there are two factors which ultimately are told against it. The Opticon cost around £2,000, which meant that it would usually only be purchased as an aid to employment. As technology improved, the price might have come down. However, given that it depended on 144 or 120 pins, vibrating pins, depending on whether you were using the earlier or later versions, I'm not quite sure that would have happened. We know that for years it has been the cost of Braille cells, which has kept Braille displays at such a high price. However, perhaps more importantly, I believe the factor that killed off the Opticon was that using it was such hard work. The two-week training course was some of the most intensive concentration I have ever had to do in my life.
Wow.
Reading a book with the Opticon was a hard slog. As a totally blind person, all my knowledge of what print looked like has come from using the Opticon, and this is useful as it has helped me to understand something of what sighted people see when they use print. There has been, in my view, been nothing to beat the Opticon when it comes to following flowcharts and diagrams. However, I think its days are very firmly in the past. There are just too many ways of getting information at less expense, both in terms of money and labour. From time to time, there has been talk of reviving the Opticon in a more modern form, but I really don't think this will ever happen. The Opticon, I'm sure, is truly consigned to history. In its day, it was great, but its day has well and truly gone. Ian Lackey. I think this kind of technology is fascinating because I've kind of realised when I was growing up that there was a lot more technology around then than there actually is now that people are using professionally to get into jobs. And I don't know if it's because that technology, I was around people who would be using that kind of stuff, blind teachers who are, you know, needing to use kit like this to do their jobs. But it does seem to me that when you want to get into a career, I have a friend of mine who went on to be a lawyer, you need this kind of equipment. This kind of specialist stuff is really important. And yes, it is expensive, but, you know, thankfully there are schemes here like Access to Work that let you do it. But, you know, there's the other side of that, which is like me, for example, I want to learn Braille, and that's brilliant, but I'm kind of living with a Perkins Braille at the moment, you know, the old-fashioned mm-hmm. Bletchley typewriter, you know, which I'm using to learn Braille. And, you know, it's brilliant, but it's all I've got, because the only other option for a Braille keyboard is something like $4,000. So, you know, it has got a lot of benefits to it, this kind of technology, clearly, for getting into work. If you're not in work, though, how do you get access to any of this? That's my worry. That's my concern. But it's been really interesting to hear this conversation go on and hear about all this. Of course, we're all too young to know what these things are, aren't we? Aren't we?
Yeah, I am. I'd love to get my hands. I'd love to get my hands on one and have a look and see what, you know, have a go at it and see what the Opticon really does. It's hard to imagine what it is for me, because it's something I've never come across. I'd absolutely love to see if there's a way that, you know, it could be updated or moved into the future.
Well, Narina has been in touch. Hello, Narina. She says, "Dear Tech Talkers, first of all, I want to thank you all for such a good tech programme. It is very informative and amusing." Well, we do try on both counts. She says, "At least you know how to keep the other two under control, Stephen." Well, I do try.
Keeping Lydia under control is difficult, now, I know.
Yeah.
Less easy, I must admit. Tim, bit easier. Now, Narina says, "You kindly gave out some contact emails and phone numbers for people like Microsoft if you had a problem. Unfortunately, the email you've given us for Microsoft is not for the likes of us." She says, "I got an email from Microsoft. I have to say I'm very disappointed. I knew there is an accessibility phone number, but sometimes it's better to explain yourself within an email. Not sure if anyone else who listens to your program has experienced the same as myself, that since Windows 10 updated their software to the fall update, that when opening up my computer, I sometimes get Microsoft Excel or IE11 at the Google homepage opening up as well. I should only get my Dolphin screen reader control panel on the screen. Personally, I think there's a bug in the Windows 10 software. Just thought I would let you know that the email is not readily available for us. Please keep smiling. Kind regards from Narina." Interesting email. And, you know, it kind of falls on nicely, actually, because we talked earlier about Be My Eyes.
Yeah.
And how Be My Eyes now has this. Narina, I really hope that is something you try, and I'd love to hear you come back to us with some thoughts on this, actually, Narina, because if you've got the Be My Eyes app on your phone, do try it out and tell us what you think of the Microsoft support from there, because arguably that might be better than the phone or the email, actually, because you can show the person the problem.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly tailor-made for that sort of problem. Let me just say, as a side note, Windows 10 fall update, how many problems did that cause for everyone?
Nightmare.
It just, audio devices disappearing, internet speed just trickling down, drivers disappearing. It's hard work.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Right, guys, you know, we talked earlier about the HomePod. Garth Humphreys, of course, went out and bought one and told us about it, which was nice. But let's now hear about some alternative speaker options that are a bit more reasonable in price. Well, you can decide that for yourself. Claire Potter's back with us again. Hi, Claire.
Hello, Stephen.
Great to have you here with us again. But I have to say, little birdie tells me that you're not going to be with us for the next few weeks. Is that right?
That little birdie was right, yes. So I am taking the whole of March off, unfortunately.
Aww. Really?
I know. Are you going to miss me?
Of course I'll miss you. We'll all miss you. Because I know people tune in regularly just to hear you. They don't care about me. They don't care about Sean or anyone else. They care about you. So, you know, I know people will be sad about this. But you are coming back, though, aren't you?
I am coming back, as long as you are all nice and you don't say things that you shouldn't say in March, because I will be listening.
Hang on. What do you mean, not say nice things? When would I ever say a bad thing against you, Claire Potter?
Well, I have heard of times when people have been off and you've said things about them.
Okay, I'm on notice. I'm on notice. Right, okay, so let's go through your picks this week. Now, last week you gave us a bit of a cryptic clue about this week, which was quite simply, listen up. What does that mean?
Yeah, so you are listening up because this week I am telling you about Bluetooth speakers, which are accessible, and by that I mean the fact that they tell you the battery level.
Ah, now that's useful, because a lot of these Bluetooth speakers, certainly the ones I've bought in the past, don't have any kind of audible feedback at all.
Correct. I've got an Anker one, which is really nice, actually. It's really nice and portable, and mine's actually got a little 3.5 jack as well, so I can plug it into my laptop and use it for that as well, so it's got both. But, you know, it's really nice, got a really nice sound to it and everything, but for the battery, it's got some bars which come up on the screen. So however many bars you've got, that's how much battery it is, which is really not useful for somebody like me who's totally blind.
Well, quite, yeah. And if you've got any kind of issues with vision at that level, you know, you're not going to be able to see it. So, you know, that kind of audible feedback is important. I love the Bose noise cancellation headphones, QC35s, version 2, by the way. You know, oh, they're so lovely. Got them for Christmas. My wife bought with them. And, you know, they're so good. But what's wonderful is, when you switch them on, they will tell you audibly, battery 50%, and they will tell you what they're paired to as well. So they even tell you the device they've connected to.
Can you get me one this year? Can you get me one for Christmas?
What's first up then on your accessible Bluetooth speaker list, Claire Porter?
Right, number one is the, I don't know how to pronounce this.
Have a go.
I'll do my best.
We won't hold it against you.
Oh, come on, calm down. He sent me off now. It's the Fugugo.
Fugugo.
Bluetooth speaker. Bluetooth speaker.
Are you making this up?
I feel like.
So, okay, so this is Fugugo, Bluetooth speaker,
yeah.
Right?
What's? I'll spell it out right, for okay. you. It's F-U-G-O-O space G-O.
Right, okay. That's good to spell, actually, because I would have no idea how to spell that one. Right, so what's so special about this?
So the thing that's so special about it is the fact that it's very portable, but it's got a very sturdy and rugged design, so perfect for those times when you knock it over because you can't see it.
Yeah.
It's got voice prompts that show you when it's pairing to something, so like in the process of pairing. Then it tells you when it's connected. And it also tells you the battery level.
Amazing. Okay, so where do we get it from? How much?
So this one is $49.99 and is from the shop, which begins with A and ends in N and sells everything online, which I will miss next month. But yeah, it's from there.
I think they'll miss the advertising as well. So $49, that's not bad, actually. Good price.
Yes, for that sort of speaker, so, yeah.
So it tells you it's connected. It tells you what the battery level is. Okay, that's good. So what's number two on the list?
Right, number two, I can pronounce this one for definite.
Go on then.
It's called the Bose SoundLink Micro Speaker.
I've got one.
Do you know?
I love it. I'll be honest, I can't find it at the moment because it's so small, but it is a lovely
speaker. Once you find it, you can send it this way to me and hope that you get it back.
That's not happening. It's not happening. Okay, so tell everyone else, because I know how wonderful it is, but tell everyone why they should consider this.
Well, I don't actually have one, but what I do know is that it's very portable again, and it's quite lightweight as well. I think people carry it in things like backpacks when they go travelling, and it's actually perfect for that. So, you know, when you want to take it into a hotel room or whatever, or, you know, if you're out on the beach somewhere, just wishful thinking there.
I'm not buying you one. You can just drop the act. I'm not buying it.
Yeah, but you should.
That's beside the point. I should do a lot of things. I should lose weight, but that ain't happening either.
Did I just say I'm coming back?
Now, this is great. And everything you said is right. You know, this is exactly why I bought it, because when I travel around and if I'm in a hotel or if I'm away somewhere and I just want a bit of music that I don't want to put headphones on for, this is brilliant. Yeah. It is very small. It's also got a wonderful little thing on it. It's got a little latch which peels off at the back and it lets you wrap it around something. So say you wanted to put it on take it into the shower, because it is waterproof as well. You can take it into the shower and hang it up in one of those shower caddies or whatever.
I'm slightly concerned.
It's great. It's brilliant.
I'm slightly concerned about taking it into the shower.
Well, I was as well, because it's not a cheap thing, as I'm sure you're going to tell us the price. It's not cheap. So how much is it and where from?
It's $99.95, yeah. And it's from the shop which begins with A and ends in N.
Yeah, not cheap at all.
It sells everything online.
But it is a good one, you're right. Okay.
As long as the neighbours don't complain.
As long as they don't complain, exactly. Yeah, not too loud, guys. Not too loud. Especially on the beach. You know, consider others. Right, what else have you got? Now, what's number three?
Right, number three is the Ultimate Ears Royal 2 Portable Bluetooth Speaker.
Okay. So what is so special about this one?
So this one is quite small and it's quite simple to use, actually, because it's only got a few buttons on it. To be honest, it's quite similar to the other two that I've spoken about today. It's a really high quality speaker, and for the price, which I'm going to tell you in a bit, you can't go wrong. It announces the battery level, and to do that, what you do is you press the volume up and down buttons. There's two separate ones, and you press them together, and that tells you the battery level. It's also got some other prompts, so I think it does, you know, some beeps and some clicks to tell you what's going on. But the cool thing about it is that you can actually link it up to eight devices.
Eight devices?
I know, exactly. Wow.
That's impressive, because some of them let you connect up to maybe two or three, but that's pretty impressive. And what's wonderful about that is that means you don't have to keep pairing it all the time.
Exactly.
New devices, which is often the problem with these. Okay, right, I'm intrigued by the price on this, because, I mean, you know, $49.99 for the Fugugo, the $99.99 for the Bose. So I'm going to pitch this, because it's got the eight devices, it's smaller. It's probably got some good sound off it being Ultimate Ears. I'm going to say it's about $69.99.
Ooh, you are wrong. It is $58.92 and it's from the shop.
Oh, I was close. I was close.
Yeah, but you wasn't close enough.
Okay, fair enough. And where from? The usual place?
It is from the usual place. The one that begins today at 99 and sells everything online.
Superb. Claire, we're going to miss you for the next few weeks, but we know you'll be back, and we look forward to it. Claire, as always, thank you so much for your Potter's Picks.
Thank you, be good.
Guys, you were noticeably quiet during Claire talking there. Are you just that sad that she's not back for another month?
Well, yes, obviously.
It's a long old time.
I know, but she deserves a break, but I was just ordering every Bluetooth speaker, that's why.
All of them. Buying. But I thought you were cheap, Sean.
No, he is cheap. That's why he was buying the cheapest one that she mentioned.
He can buy as many as he likes then.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm using Stephen's credit card.
That's all right then.
Yeah, that's it. The Tech Talk credit card is well and truly spent. Guys, that's it for this week. Been a quick hour, but thank you so much. We've talked about so much stuff. If you want to get involved with the show or you want to send us an email, you can at email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Lydia, you're back with us in a couple of weeks' time.
I am indeed.
For your sins. And Sean, I guess you're back next week.
You can't get rid of me, Stephen. I'm back every week.
And we've tried. Guys, that's it. Remember the podcast. Catch you next time.